All right, everybody, welcome to the first post-weekend interview show podcast. Quite fittingly, the subject is the Oklahoma City bombing. I've been doing radio on the subject of the Oklahoma bombing ever since I started in 1998. Used to call my show the Oklahoma Bombing Show on Free Radio Austin sometimes because I would talk about it so often. And now I have the opportunity and the lucky acquaintance of J.D. Cash, the opportunity to interview him about this subject, as I have twice before. He's a reporter for the McCurtain County Gazette, and for the last 10 years, going on 11 years, he has been really the leader of the pack of the reporters who have actually attempted to find out the real story of Oklahoma City besides just the McVeigh and Nichols did it story that we've all been fed. And the man clearly deserves 10 Pulitzer Prizes for his 10 years worth of work on this. But
or as the FBI says, I'm the grease in the conspiracy wheel.
Yeah, which is, that's fine too, because...
You know, you take it as they give it to you. Thank you, Scott, I appreciate it.
Sure, well, you absolutely deserve it, J.D., no doubt about it. And since you, thank you very much, had me as a guest on your radio show this morning, I figure I can return the favor, and we can cover the news, which is that Michael Fortier, one of the convicted conspirators in the Oklahoma City bombing, is being released today, is that right?
Yeah, yes, sir. Scott, he's probably out there wandering the streets as we speak, and... The question is, was he rehabilitated? Don't know.
Well,
time will tell.
What exactly was his level of participation in the Oklahoma City bombing, anyway?
Well, I mean, here's what he's admitted to. I went to three trials with the guy. We had two in Denver, two federal trials, one for McVeigh and Nichols, and then one in McAllister, Oklahoma, for the state trial. And here's what we ended up with. He admits to being fully aware of what the plot was, knowing very fully aware of what the when the attack was going to take place. He had actually visited the Mirror Building with McVeigh ahead of time. He participated in the sale of firearms that the FBI said was crucial because some of the money actually funded the bombing. Then he helped McVeigh and Nichols store explosives in the Kingman area, visited the storage locker. His wife actually sat there on the kitchen floor with McVeigh as he described the shape charge that he was going to construct to blow up the Oklahoma City Federal Building. Told both of them how it was going to be as far as what the ingredients were going to be. And they went out in the desert with McVeigh when he tested the explosives. I just don't know what's left. Now, aside from that, we have indications that he had much more involvement. I have an enormous amount of information involving his participation in a bombing for hire in Kingman in February of 1995. They call it the practice bombing, actually. It was just McVeigh and Fortier agreed to accept, I think it was about $2,000 from a guy by the name of Vollmer, Clark Vollmer out there, to blow a guy's house up, send him a message because he hadn't paid for the drugs that he had been advanced by Vollmer. And it was called another reference to it out there is the McPeak bombing. So here you have this guy who has absolutely no bottom line. He's addicted to methamphetamines and has no alibi for the day of the bombing or the days leading up to it or immediately afterwards. His sole alibi witness that the FBI supposedly believed was his dope buddy that lived there on McVicker Street in Kingman, who then refused to take a stand in any of these trials and support his friend's alibi that he was with this guy on the night of the 18th and day of the 19th smoking crystal meth. Now, I have this guy's girlfriend's 302, his interview with the FBI from April the 21st or 22nd, and she says that she hadn't even seen Michael Fortier during the crucial days before or of the bombing or shortly thereafter, and that he was not at her house with Mr. Rosencrantz, who was his supposed alibi witness. So, there's still a lot of questions about whether Michael Fortier wasn't in downtown Oklahoma City with McVay on that day along with the other guys.
Now, JD, you've told me before that the men who actually constructed the bomb for the truck were gold miners in Arizona. Do you have any information that connects Michael Fortier to them?
We sure do. One of those people was in the drug business, with Michael Fortier, and was also involved in this Kingman bombing, the practice bombing, they call it. One of the miners. So you have that connection. Mr. Vollmer was spotted regularly in the neighborhood delivering dope to these people. Also.
Now, JD, you are absolutely positive that these gold miners to which you refer, that they are the ones who built this bomb?
As positive as I can be without having their confessions in hand. I studied it for years, and there simply is every indication that they should have been the FBI's first suspects, and they were. But then they were dropped. And when I asked them, why would you drop them, I got no good answer. Now, at some point, we will reveal who these people are, and it may not be too much further out. We may go ahead and run a story about one of those people, because Mr. Fortier was pretty adamant with the FBI that he could put this guy in there with McVay and with Nichols. Actually, he withheld two. There was two names that he gave them that were also important co-conspirators in the bombing that the FBI did not go after. And one of them was one of those guys.
And you have you have the FBI documents where he's telling them this?
Yeah, sure do.
To get this straight, you have the FBI 302 where Michael Fortier, the guy who turned state's witness and is being released today in this case, where he pointed at least one of these gold miners.
Let me clear up two things to be perfectly accurate.
Okay.
These are federal documents. These are FBI interviews that were made available to the Secret Service, and the documents I have are from the Secret Service.
Okay.
Referring to what the FBI is working with. And this is after the bombing, very shortly after the bombing, when these reports were created. One of the people that I believe played a very important role in the design of this explosive device was an out-of-work miner from the Odman, Arizona area, which is just outside of Kingman. And he had a close friend, a very close friend, who was had an advanced degree from a university in California, who was a member of the Arizona Patriots, who lived in the Bullhead City area, who had an enormous amount of experience since his college days, all the way up till the time that he was detained after the bombing, with building ammonium nitrate bombs.
Now, in the past, it's seemed fairly clear that the crime ring, the Aryan Republican Army crime ring that carried out this bombing, was riddled with countless FBI
informants
and ATF agents, provocateurs.
Secret Service informants. It's riddled with informants.
So
I'm guessing some of these other names are too.
Now that's the
question. I'm wondering if a couple of these people that Fortier has put forward and said they're going to go down too, that the Secret Service is telling their bosses, that the FBI has told them these guys are going down, Fortier is going to name them. Those two guys didn't go there because they're informants. That's my guess.
Okay, now, JD, to cut right to the chase here, if we have a bombing plot where from top to bottom we have informants, perhaps, as you're saying, even including the men who built the bomb.
Yeah, what if the guy builds a bomb is one of their own stinking people?
Okay, so the question is, if this is a sting gone wrong, at what point did it go wrong? Because if you and I are running the police department, JD, we don't let our informant go ahead and put together an operational explosive. We stop the plot before then, right?
Well, that's the plan, yeah. Or maybe we make sure the bomb can't even go off anyway. You know, do we have a fail-safe? You know, do we have a plan B? Sure we do.
Now,
but did they?
On the other hand, you know, to be a bit more conspiracy-minded about it, is it not plausible that they found a terrorist plot by some neo-Nazi types, and they decided to piggyback it and use it?
I think you could make that argument, too. And that they piggybacked it and watched it, and then somehow got confused. And it got past them. One old FBI guy told me, he said, you don't have any idea how hard it is to pull off a successful sting operation. What made this one stand out was because so many people died.
And the incredible cover-up. Yeah. I mean, I'm reading the McCurtain County Gazette. They're talking about their satellite photos of Elohim City from 2 days after the bombing. Yeah. And then they're going to try to turn around and tell me that Elohim City and the Nazis had nothing to do with it.
Right. They have no interest in it. You know, here's the thing. If you had screwed this thing up, let's say that you were Louis Freeh, are you and Bill Clinton going to march out there with Janet Reno and tell the American people any of this?
No, of course not.
It's not in their character.
But it still just scratches the back of the mind to think, how
you
could they possibly have screwed up anything that bad that it got 170 people killed?
I think that this stuff happens all the time. And this one is just made worse because the body count is so high. I think that they screw up just about everything they touch. Over the years, I'm starting to lose a lot of faith in these people's ability to do anything right.
And you make a great point about
and the media. It's our fault.
Inability.
That they're getting away with this.
Yeah, I mean the thing is, if the screw up is so bad, then they're just not going to investigate it at all. I mean, when we're talking about Andre Strassmeyer, who seems to be the primary provocateur.
Well, obviously, he's a snitch.
And working not just for the cops, but literally working for the Anti-Defamation League and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, for that crime to be prosecuted in a real way would destroy a lot of important relationships that are obviously deemed more important than justice.
Oh, and we saw the news yesterday, and today we have this report on Henry Cisneros. It took him 10 years, and how many millions of dollars, $23 million, to produce a report that Janet Reno sidetracked that investigation and kept them from getting the right documents they needed to stick it to Henry Cisneros. Well, I've done all this with a very little help from the rest of the world for a whole lot less than $23 million.
Well, and where's the
tipping
point?
Just imagine if I'd had that kind of money and that kind of support, you know.
Where's the tipping point, JD? Because you have been at it for going on 11 years now, and there are, I wouldn't really be able to guess, but probably, I don't know, tens of thousands at least of people in this country who know, if not vast details, they at least know, generally speaking, that there's a much larger story behind the Oklahoma bombing.
I think that you've answered your own question, because 77% of the people, according to a USA Today poll some years ago, said that they did not believe the government's story, that they did believe that there was a wider conspiracy, and I think that easily, probably even more than that now. I think if you go and talk to the cops in Oklahoma City, I bring that up because I find it very interesting that they strongly believe that Elohim City, they tell everybody, Elohim City is where this thing came from. Everybody accepts it in Oklahoma City, in the police department, that there was a cover-up and that it involves Elohim City and those neo-Nazis over there. And that's just generally accepted.
Well, if it's generally accepted, how come nothing can be done about it?
What if it's institutional within the FBI, the ATF, and the Justice Department? Well, who's going to challenge them?
I guess they have a monopoly on prosecution, don't
they? They have the monopoly. And Congress, well, they've got their own problems now. You know, and I don't have $20 million to pay a Jack Abramoff to get their attention. You know, or $82 million, which apparently is what it costs to get your attention up there.
Yeah, at least you know? That much.
So, there you go. We have the best and the worst government that money can buy.
It's still a nice place to live, this country, but
yeah,
if the government commits a crime against you, good luck getting justice.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to just belabor the frustration thing here, but honestly, the story about Elohim City has been out since 1995.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, right? You started writing about Elohim City in what month of 1995?
We started going out there in June, July, August, September, October, November, and actually started publishing in January and February.
So
of 96.
There should be that a point somewhere where that 70% you cite becomes 99%, and people demand that heads roll.
Well,
but apparently not. I guess it's just been too
long, and people don't
care anymore.
If what they see right now in the headlines doesn't get them mad enough, I don't see how that deal is going to get them mad enough.
Yeah, I guess
American
so.
People have gotten soft and fat. They love their Barron Circus.
Of afraid. So if you can't be a hero, just live out your heroics through a character on TV.
That's right. That's what they're looking for.
Well, I'm glad I have you to live my heroics through, JD.
No, you're doing some good work down there yourself.
All right, I appreciate it.
I appreciate
it.
Okay, take good care.
Everyone go to McCurtain.com, just MC and then curtain, just like hanging from your windows there. McCurtain.com, and you can read all of JD Cash's Oklahoma bombing files. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.